We're resuming the interview after a phone call. And we were talking about your father and mother and uncle and aunt deciding to sell the market garden. And you were saying, you know, that the subdivisions were happening.
Yes, that's right. And and they weren't that old. I mean, Dad would have been in his mid to late 50s. But I think it was getting to a stage also where you needed more land to make it more viable for the growing of vegetables. The watering system had changed. I mean, everybody had shifted now to overhead irrigation, like the Mercurios next door. They were watering celery with sprinklers rather than furrows. So it was getting to a stage where something had to give, and they thought, no, well, they had enough, but sold.
And I know that some of the other vanity bought land, out at Bolivar and, on Port Wakefield Road.
That's right. They'd bought that quite a few years beforehand. My dad and my uncle, they weren't, enterprising enough. They just kept with what they had and sold when they wanted to.
And would how would they have felt about selling up?
Oh, I don't know. I thought they would. I didn't seem to notice any difference. Quite happy. They all got a job in the council and still in the gardening, side of things,
What year was the new house built? And did the new house coincide with selling the market garden?
No. The new house was, I reckon I would have been about eight or nine when that was built. So that was, late 50s that was built. That had nothing to do with the garden as far as selling. And
your uncle and auntie built before, said.
Yeah.
And the location of the house was really right on Hartley Road, both of those houses, weren't they?
Right, yeah, they're on the northeast corner of the property. So that's because that was the end of Hartley Road at that stage, right?
Oh, it didn't go on towards Findon Road.
No. There was nothing there. There's only paddock there. Yeah. So the road, and even it really didn't open that the last 100 metres before that was Jarman's property, and they were occupying the road as well. So it stopped a little bit, the next street over first, and then that bit, when the Jarman sold that bit of Hartley Road, opened because access was really through Pine Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you had to go through Pine Street
to get out, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, down Pine Street, Collingwood Avenue.
And what happened to the house that you had lived in, the corrugated iron house?
Oh, we leased that. We leased that for a few years. And then it was just left there in ruin until the whole subdivision was created.
And did the subdivision happen fairly soon after the, finishing the market gardens?
Oh, yeah, well, that's, sort of, the preliminary design and started it. And then once we... imagined that we were given a time to leave the property, and then once that was done, they started building the roads, creating the roads. Yeah.
would have changed that area totally.
Yeah, so the only ones that held out was the Mercurios next door for a few more years.
And what do you remember how your parents felt about having a new house?
No, I can't remember. But I suppose we were all happy.
And the packing shed and things like that would have still been left there when you moved to the new house.
Yeah, that was still there, and that's where we still operate from.
And your father and uncle both went and worked for a council.
Yes. So, they went down to Brighton. They went down to the Brighton in those days. Brighton Council.
And did your parents continue growing vegetables in their garden? You know, back
garden? Oh, in the back garden, yeah. It was just enough to eat.
But it seems like a lot of the market gardeners continued, as they got older, going back to you talking about school, you were saying that you probably stayed at school longer than you might have, wanted to, because you weren't sure what you wanted to do after school.
That's
so
right.
So what did you do when you left school?
When I left school, because my leaving results were good enough, I managed to get into the Institute of Technology then. And I looked for a job a career or whatever, that I could spend time outside and portion of the time inside. So through a bit of career counselling and whatever, I found surveying. So I found, this will do. So.
And how long was the course to...
I did 3 years. I did one course 3 years, then I did the diploma in surveying, which is another 3 years. That was part-time. I spent 6 years virtually.
And what was your first employment?
My first employment, when I left school in 1969, I managed, because in those days there was a Commonwealth Employment Office where you registered as unemployed, whatever. So, and by that time I had enrolled at the Institute, and I was on. I don't think I managed to get any money from the Commonwealth Government through the being unemployed. They found me a job as a chainman, they called it in those days, with the South Australian Government. That was like a surveyor's assistant, and so I went for the interview, and yes, it was provided you've enrolled. You can start.
And how old would you have been then?
20.
20?
Yeah. Oh, 19. 19, sorry.
So was that how part-time would it have been? Or was that full-time?
I used to go to the institute one full day a week, plus two couple of nights a week. So I was, 2 or 3 nights a week.
And did you do a lot of travel with this job?
Once I became qualified, I travelled all over the state.
And that was with the government work?
Government work,
So it gave you the opportunity to be outside?
Yeah. Free.
And what did your parents think of you getting this work?
Oh, they're a bit confused what I was actually doing, but never mind. They were quite happy. So,
And I understand that when you were younger, you had a job with a local man who employed you to help him with some ploughing work.
Oh yeah, we used to employ a contractor, and so do many other gardeners around the place. Used to employ this same contractor to do that because we never had tractors apart from the little ranch, and we used to do the ploughing for him. And
his name was?
Yeah, his name was Ron Gaskin.
And where did he live?
He lived up here on, was it Sando Street, up here at Findon.
Oh.
Yeah.
And did he have equipment there? Machinery?
Yeah, and he used to leave it around the local gardeners, just leave it there overnight for the next day or whatever.
And so lots of the people around here would have employed him to... So he would have had a tractor and a...
couple of tractors or whatever. So, and at the time he was short on labour, so I used to hop on the tractor and drive.
And how did he know that you would be available to do that?
Well, he used to work for us.
Oh, and he would have asked?
And he used to drive the truck and I used to drive the tractor to dig the potatoes, and you know, bit by bit I got used to it.
And so you went and worked on other people's land?
During school holidays and like weekends sometime, but mainly school holidays,
And were you interested in, you know, machinery and things like that?
Yeah, I was interested in it, but I also, the other thing that got me into surveying was that we used to level the land for the, especially for glass houses to, you know, so the water flow. And he used to have a level that I used to look through, and I thought, to get the levels right. So.
And was that, I'm trying to imagine what the level looked like.
Oh, it's only a little instrument that big, sitting on a tripod.
And he used to use it so that he would make sure that people's glass houses had some gradient.
That's right, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because the gradient would have been important for the watering.
That's right.
And did the gradient go down towards the river?
Oh, it didn't matter which way it went. As long as there wasn't a huge fall or use a U incline, so that's what got me interested in a bit of surveying as well. So I thought, that's all right.
And how many people would Ron Gaskin have had working for him?
Oh, no, just me at that stage, yeah.
So you would have got around a bit in this area?
Yeah.
And you would have, can you remember the names of some of the Venator Market gardeners that you would have worked on?
Oh, well, not that many. Obviously the Mercurios initially, but...
Tonelato.
No, they were mainly into... tomatoes, glasshouse stuff. Where there was some Bulgarians around the place as well, so...
Nearer to Tapnis Hill Road? And what about the Santins?
Well, no, the Santins, used to have tractors. Right, so it was with glass houses, you don't need many tractors. And once you've got the glass house up, well, that's it, right? The soil remains level, nothing happens, right? So, the market gardens down here, then the Bulgarians, once they built their glass house, well, that was the end of it, yeah.
And what about Zarella?
Yeah, once again, they had plenty of tractors.
Mm. So people, Ron Gaskin must have kept working. Like, was that the only work he did?
Yeah, but he used to also have a lot, Used to work up in Virginia way as well. There were plenty of extra people up. You know, many people up there used to start to build glasshouses. So there was a lot of levelling out there to do for glasshouses.
Yeah. And did you mix much with the people that you worked for?
No, no, just
the job.
Just on site and going. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm interested to know about your social life after you left school. What kinds of, how did you spend your time, you know, your free time when you weren't working or studying?
Oh, well, I met my first wife, so I was always with her.
And how did you meet?
I met in hospital. Yeah, I was a patient and she was the nurse.
Oh, true.
Yeah, so...
So there were, what sorts of things would you have done, you know?
Oh, whatever, the usual movies, cabarets, whatever was going at that stage.
And what about the friends that you had, that you'd gone to school with? Did you maintain friendships with them?
Yeah, we maintained friendship with them, yeah. So,
I'm interested to know about the customs in your family. Did your parents keep any customs from the Veneto region?
No, I can't think of any customs. That, I don't know whether we have got customs. I mean, apart from... making the wine and killing the pig and
well, they're pretty important.
We kept doing that yearly, wine and making the salami.
Where would your was this just your parents or was it your parents and your uncle and auntie?
Oh yeah, it was too small to do one. You know, and then after we sold the garden.
Oh, we've got another phone call coming in, so we'll just pause this.
If I can get it, how we get this out.
Unbelievable.
Stopped.
Unbelievable.
Well...
I get these phone calls that... when you lift up, there's nobody at the end.
Oh, that's so annoying, isn't it? Like, really. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. I did a naughty thing, left my phone on, so, you know. We're talking about the wine and the killing the pig, so I'll ask you first about the wine.
Yeah.
We're talking about, we're resuming the interview and just talking about the customs of winemaking and making the salami. With the winemaking, you were saying that it was obviously easier to have another family that you'd do that with.
Yes.
Where did you get the grapes?
Oh, the grapes were... we used to actually pick our own grapes up at Williamstown up in the Barossa. And, yeah, there was... What was it? Us next door to my uncle, two uncles, that's four, and Frankie... family, that's, you know, five families used to...
So that was your father, Ermenegildo.
Yeah, my Uncle Chelsea and Giuseppe and Frankie.
Oh, okay. Mm. So all of you were involved in picking the grapes?
Yeah, we used to go up and pick the grapes and...
And then where would you come back to?
Oh, we'd come back to, there was my Uncle Gildo's place. There was a couple of tanks there. And we used to squeeze or machine the grapes and they go in there, into the tanks in there. And then the barrels will be lined up and then the barrel will be filled in and then distributed to... to each place, yeah.
And was it distributed through bottles or
kegs? Kegs, yeah.
And red or white wine?
Red, red, always red.
And would that have been enough for a year?
Yes, 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 yeah. Plenty.
And what about killing the pig? What was the process involved there?
Well, initially, once we had, you know, when we had the garden and all that, there was there wasn't as many involved in that. But there was still Frankie, us, Uncle Jill next door. So it was still three of us, and same thing happened. With the kid, you know, just to buy the pig and then. Make the salamis, and then that tradition still continued after the garden was sold, but we only did it between ourselves, my mum and my dad, sorry, and my sister. It's only us that we do a pig.
And where did you get the pig from?
Oh, various places, wherever. There was a person up at Bolivar, he used to have them, so he used to look after them, so we used to buy from there.
Would that have been an important part of the, you know, food customs in your family?
Oh, yes, yeah, my dad used to like the pork, and it wasn't essential, but it was important.
Yeah. And what about your mum's cooking? Like, would she have cooked food that she knew from her traditional...
I don't know, really, whether that was traditional, whether she learnt or...
And I understand that in 1963, your family, your mother and your father and Norma, not Lino, went to Italy.
Yes, we went to Italy. Yeah.
And, like, there's a bit of a story about you, isn't there?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, I have got a condition which at that stage they weren't sure of the consequences if they didn't have a ready supply of blood on handy for me if I needed it. So, of course, it was too expensive to go by plane in those days, so we all went by boat. I was allowed to go because there was enough volunteers on board, personnel on board working for the ship company that were prepared to make itself available for a transfusion if I needed one. So
that had to be cleared up before. Or, you know, that had to be known before you made the trip. And was that, was someone on, I guess there's a medical unit or something on board, which would have meant that they could have taken blood from people? Well,
yeah, that's right.
And what is the condition that you have had?
It's called PXE.
PXE. And what is that?
That's short for, if I can pronounce it, pseudoxanthoma elasticum. And it's a condition which unfortunately has affected my eyes as well. So it's all related.
Right, and it means that your vision is quite restricted.
Yes.
Yeah.
While I was here, I was having from time to time blood transfusions because I used to bleed a bit. But after I had the last one, because surgery was out of the question, they didn't want to operate. But the last one in 1991 was the last time they decided to operate, and been right ever since.
So you haven't had to have blood transfusions?
No.
And in 1963, on the boat, did you have to have one?
No, I've never felt anything all through the trip. till we come back, no problems.
That was good.
It was good.
So you would have been 13 going over.
Yeah, yeah.
And how long did you stay there with your family?
We came back about this time. So we left in March, 9 months.
Wow, that's a long time, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, a long time.
And so who of your relatives did you meet in Italy? You know, like on your mother's side, your father's side?
Well, there wasn't that many on my father's side because my uncle was still alive then, I think. And I met a few of his sisters and he had a couple of sisters and their family. And my mum's side, she had quite a few. So, yeah, it was all cousins.
And do you remember any of your impressions of Italy or of, the way that your relatives lived?
No, very poor. Yeah, so, what can you say? Not much money around. The houses weren't much.
And did you do much travel with the family, or was it mainly staying, with relatives?
Oh no, we stayed. We only stayed at one place.
Right.
And that was with my. I was fortunate to meet my grandparents. So
on your mother's side.
On my mother's side, yeah. So
and that was at Salvarosa.
That was at Salvarosa, yeah. So we stayed with them and one of my mum's uncle. So.
And did they live in one of those really big old houses?
No. They had built a more modern house. It was solid built and double story, and wasn't one of these big which. Was where there was my mum and my dad's family were still in. Yes.
And it must have been a place that had housed many generations.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's where the balustrades come out from, and that. So.
And do you remember what it was like for your parents? Like, because would that have been their first time?
Yeah, that would have been their first time back since they came out, since they were married, I suppose.
Yeah.
It was their first time back, so they found it a bit, things had changed a bit, but I didn't know any different.
Yeah. And how did you spend your time then? Like, because you wouldn't have gone to school, would you?
No, we spent most of the time travelling, visiting or travelling or going to the market, the days went quick.
Yeah, it must have been really interesting for you to have gone.
Yeah, we stayed there a bit longer than we had to because we came back on the maiden voyage of the Marconi, and it wasn't quite ready, when it's supposed to be, so we delayed an extra couple of months or so.
And who would have looked after the market gardens here?
Oh, they were restricted in planting, so whatever my uncle could do with hire a bit of a labour, they did it.
That's really interesting. And you would have missed all that school.
Yeah,
here.
I missed 1 year of school. So I didn't do grade six. Sorry, I didn't do grade seven. I did grade six. And then I went to St. Michael's and they put me up. I didn't have to do grade seven. So I was like, oh, that's another year I saved.
So that meant that you would have kept in line with your friends?
Yeah. I would. Yeah, that's right.
From school,
yeah.
Do you remember your parents visiting the relatives of other market gardeners in Italy?
No.
So you came back and you did school and life just sort of kept going along?
Kept going along, that's
and,
it.
And did your PXE ever become something difficult as you grew up?
Well, it was interfering with your life. I mean, if you have to go and have blood transfusions every now and again, it does get a bit, you become uncertain of what your future is, particularly when it was fairly rare at that stage.
Were you able to play sport?
That's not a problem. I played sport, yeah.
What sort of sport did you play?
Oh, mainly football, yeah.
Like Australian rules?
Yeah, Australian rules, yeah.
Not soccer?
No.
Was your father interested in sport? We talked earlier about the fact that your parents visited other families here.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the Veneto community here in this area of, say, Flinders Park, Kidman Park?
The Veneto community became a little bit more united when they built the Veneto Club, and therefore it was a place where, even my mum and dad frequent quite a few times, so it helped to unite the Veneto group. But as time went on, people, that generation got a bit old, and eventually one by one, they disappeared. So,
Were you interested in the Veneto Club?
Oh, yes, I was interested in Veneto Club. I was more interested in Australian stuff than the Veneto.
And was that because of your age, do you think?
I wasn't connected with that other group that much.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because your sister Norma wasn't she? And Lino?
Oh, not so much.
So the Veneto Club, that's an interesting point that you felt that it united, and I guess it was also uniting the people who came after the war as well as your parents' generation.
Yes, yes. They had somewhere to go, and they cooked traditional Veneto stuff, they went there quite a few times. They enjoyed it.
Did you become a member?
I didn't initially. I didn't become a member initially because I didn't think I'd use it enough.
And also if you were more interested in kind of spreading your wings beyond the Veneto community. Now, when you think about yourself, I ask people this question towards the end of the interview. Do you feel Australian? Do you feel Italian? Do you feel Veneto? Or do you feel, that you have a connection to the Trevisani?
No, I feel Italian.
Oh, okay.
I feel Italian with, sad to you're in between the two. I was born here. That's the difference. If you were born over there, well, you'd be 90% over there and 10% Australian. But being born here, but I feel Italian.
And what does that feel like to you? to feel Italian?
Well, it helps me recognise the traditional Veneto customs that you got, you know, that you have around the place, and you enjoy it, and it brings back sort of memories of Italy, you know. So.
And does it happen through friendships?
Well, not so much through, you know, functions that you might go.
And what functions do you go to?
Well, the Veneto Club functions, and then you know, even Sunday I went to the Trevisani.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
so they had a picnic? Yeah. A Christmas picnic?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And who would have been the people that you mixed with?
I went with my daughter, with my daughter's family, and I saw a few people there, but even that's getting a bit depressing. Everybody's getting old.
Yeah. And why did your daughter's family go?
Oh, they like the food that they present, and so.
And so, is your daughter married to an Italian?
No. She married an Australian. Yeah, so, yeah. But he's all right. He likes to go.
That's interesting that your daughter would be, you know, interested enough to attend a Trevisani nel Mondo event.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the other daughter's, she lives in Mildura, and otherwise she would have been there, you know. So, Michelle, the eldest daughter, she's been in the Veneto area, and she knows what it's like, you know.
So she feels some kind of connection.
And she lived in Griffith for a lot of.
Griffith is a lot of vanity,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, and they would have known your parents. Well, that's really nice that is down the generation.
Yeah.
Because you'd be called second generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so your daughter and son are third generation. Oh, that's really interesting. Do you feel Veneto more than Italian?
Yes. Italian, you've got to know how to speak Italian. Yeah, no, that's what I think, but because I can't speak Italian, you know, I can speak Veneto.
Yeah.
And
but Veneto is a really important language. I mean, it's your first language in a way, isn't
it? That's
right.
Yeah.
Because it's
your.
Did any of your kids learn Italian at school?
No. So,
is there anything? Oh, I wanted to ask. Did you ever go back again to Italy?
Oh yeah, I've been there. Last time I was there in 2017. We stayed. Lindy, she didn't come, but Michelle, lives in Mildura. She came with her family, and my son, he came, and we stayed in Castelfranco for 2 weeks, and we visited. Simon particularly wanted to go and see where the balustrades come out of, so we went there, and then
went to Valar.
We went to Valar. We went to the original household.
And is there any relative living there now?
We didn't actually go in because it looked a bit strange. I don't know, because the last cousin I had from the balustrade side, he died. So I don't know what they did with the house, all right? So we didn't go in, but the time before that, Lindy, because we met up in London, and we flew over to Treviso, and we went to the Balestrin household with Lindy, Faye, and myself, and we met the cousin. He was still alive then, so in the Ballestrand household.
So would he have been, how is he related, how was he related to you?
He's first cousin. He's my dad's brother's son.
Oh.
The two brothers, yeah. He's,
yeah. And that brother stayed in Italy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And Dina, he took over the house. Right. And when we were there, the house, they'd sold half of it, and he lived in the other half.
And it was one of those really old country places?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was all fenced off. Half of it was fenced off.
Ah.
Yeah, so...
So your children are interested in their ancestors?
They are. Did you say...
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's really interesting because often, you know, the next generation isn't so interested. So what makes them interested, do you think?
I don't know.
Did they have a close relationship with their nonni?
Oh, That's maybe that was what it was. I don't know. But they were interested, yeah.
And when you stayed in Castelfranco Veneto, what did you do for 2 weeks?
Oh, we toured. We made that our base, and then we toured. We went to Venice. We went to Jesolo. We went up the hills. We saw my other cousins on my mum's side at Montebelluna, Caerano actually. But so we toured.
And you would have been speaking Veneto, and your kids would have been depending on you for all the, and Faye too, on your language skills.
Well, yeah, because we used to eat out every night, or most nights. Of course, the menu is in Italian, but I can't read it. But
you'd hear what they say.
The waiter,
cameriere,
whatever, then I'd explain it to them.
Yeah. And that must have been a really lovely experience to be there.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And did you have a feeling that you were in this area where your people had come from?
When you walk around and everybody talks, you know, some talk Veneto, some talk Italian, having this language around you, it's really nice.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. So you've been, as a 13-year-old,
been to Italy in 2006 when we got married. We went on a bus tour then. And then I went in 2000, that's when I went with Lindy, 2006, because she was over in London, right? And then I went in but that time we went twice with Lindy, and then we were on a bus tour later. We went not necessarily through Castelfranco, but we went to Venice and saw some, you know, down to Rome and those sort of things. And then I went in 2017.
In 2017, did you stay in Castelfranco again?
Yeah, that's when we stayed in Castelfranco.
For
2 weeks.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful place, isn't it? Yeah, area.
Yeah, so we stayed in Castelfranco right in the plaza, you know. Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
That's so nice. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of the interview, Louis. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about your experience of, you know, growing up in this area or being part of the Veneto community?
No. Quite happy with, you know, what went on in the last 60 years.
Oh, that's really good. It's a good thing to be able to say. And it's really interesting that you would say that you do feel like Veneto and, you know, that it's a strong kind of importance for you.
I don't feel Australian.
You don't?
Not a real Australian. I'm not. It's in that in between area, but more Italian.
And that's your heritage, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. You know, as a child of, you know, migrant parents, to kind of feel that you've got their heritage, and that's, you know, helped you become who you are. But you also, as you said, you were born here. But I'm so interested in your children having a very strong sense of their Italian heritage.
Well, they, you know, they knew my my mum, and they used to eat down there and, you know, stay around there, and they can see the difference between an Australian household and an Italian household, and they like it.
Yeah. And they obviously feel attached to your mum. And she kept some of those traditions going. Like,
well, you know, Michelle, she got chickens because she used to hang around with my mum with chickens.
Do they kill the pig?
No. But she likes salami.
Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, that's really, really lovely. Yeah. Well, I think that we've covered, you know, a really good area of your life as a son of your parents who came from the Veneto and who were market gardeners for a really long time. And and also being a balustrine, part of a really significant group of people in this area.
It's good.
So thank you very much for the time. And we've been talking about this interview for a long time, so I'm really pleased that on the 2nd of December 2021...
We made it.
Thank you very much, Louis.
Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution.